What's going on, everybody? This is Billy Alvaro, the Unstoppable BA, and you're listening to Unstoppable REI Wealth. Today, I'm going to be interviewing Jerome Maldonado from New Mexico. Guy has a really cool story. When you listen to him, he started off as a contractor, got into the real estate investing game by necessity, and now this guy has projects going on literally all across America, from California to Washington to Puerto Rico. He has his hands in just about everything. He's a well-poised, well-spoken, incredible human being. I didn't know him personally until I did the interview today, but I gotta tell you, he has his stuff together. He's well-polished, and his secret early on was doing everything himself with cash, his own cash. And he got to a point in life where he realized in order for him to grow and to seriously scale, he needed to spread his wings and bring on joint venture partners. And he talks about the partnerships that he has, how he formulates them, how he gets these niche deals put together. And he's doing some really, really big deals. So if you want to learn about how he's getting involved with apartment investing, these niche complexes that he's putting together, and joint ventures, this episode is something you need to listen to. Check him out. He also has an event that he's going to be hosting in November, which he talks about at the end. And you don't want to miss it. Again, this is Mr. Jerome Maldonado. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to Unstoppable Real Estate Investing Wealth. My name is Billy Alvaro, aka the Unstoppable VA, former billion-dollar mortgage banker, gone bankrupt, turned professional real estate investor, where each week you'll learn the tools, strategies, systems, and secrets myself and other highly successful real estate investing entrepreneurs use to start, grow, and scale their businesses, creating massive profits, and how you can too. And we'll teach you how to put those profits to work so you no longer have to. Get ready to finally experience financial freedom and generational wealth. Now let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of Unstoppable REI Wealth. I am your host, Billy Alvaro, and it has been a hot minute. I think I've taken off the whole summer on doing these podcasts. I had an absolute full plate, but I'm back at it now. I got a good group of lineup people that we're going to be interviewing. And today, from New Mexico, I don't know this gentleman personally, but I'm going to get to know him as you're going to get to know him. I'm going to be interviewing Jerome Maldonado. Are you a Guinea, Jerome? Are you like me, a Guinea?
I got a little bit of Guinea in me.
A little bit again. I love it, brother. Listen, welcome to the show, bro. Good to meet you. Listen, Jerome, you know, I want to get to know you and how our guests get to know you. So just give us a little bit of a brief background of how long have you been in real estate investing and how did you get started?
Hey, Bill. Yeah, thank you. And good morning to you. Thanks for having me here. So I got involved in real estate on accident. You know, in 1998, I started a construction company after a four-year run in direct sales and network marketing. And I got into real estate just to invest in rental homes, just so I have an asset. So I never really considered myself, I never went into it for quote unquote, the professional career, right? And I started investing just to have assets that worked for me. And I had some rental income coming in and it was my little security blanket. And so one rental home turned two rental homes, turned into a little commercial building that I bought for my business, not really as an investment, but for my business. And that commercial building had five units. Went in and renovated a small little building for $250,000. And I decided to do another one because it worked so well. And I had tenants paying for it. And I was doing this on the side of everything I was doing full time, which was a lot of concrete work at the time. And still today, we still have our concrete company today. We've been running that same company since the late 90s. And then I decided, hey, why don't I start building homes? You know, I have a construction company. I'm doing a little bit of real estate. We'll build a few homes and see how they roll. And they were good. My first home, I made a little over $80,000. So it was successful. I decided to double down on it and do a couple. And then since we were buying a couple retail centers, I thought, why don't I try to build one? And so I bought a piece of land and I built a little retail center. And then I built another one, then an office complex. And like any entrepreneur, you know, when you see profits and you see reward in something, you start pushing in that direction. And so I moonlighted in real estate aggressively back in 2002, 2003, 4, 5, 6. And then the recession hit. We got caught a little bit in retail and office, but our subdivisions have done well. And so I pulled my foot off the pedal for a little while. Revamped what I was doing, went into Phoenix and started buying a lot of distressed assets, single unit real estate and multifamily fourplexes. And lo and behold, I didn't know that stuff was going to grow so much and so aggressively over a decade. It was a blessing in disguise. I bought that stuff really as a means to service debt on bad assets that I had acquired, had built over the recession or just before the recession. And it became a market that I fell in love with. And then we continued building houses again, starting about 2012. And then 2016, Billy, I decided I needed to get a little more bold again. We had gotten a little conservative. We softened up our business run for a number of years just to clean up 2008. I think a lot of people did that. In fact, some people never came back. And we continued running our company. We got into franchising. I landed up owning a bunch of Subway stores, some other companies to service debt on some of our real estate. And then in 2016, we made a big run at it. And this year, we have about $70 million of real estate on the books for the year. And it's going to be a good year. Next year is going to be a great year. And we've been able to partner with some great people, and our asset base has grown for sure. So we're excited for where we've come in the last 5 years and where we're moving over the next decade. So.
I love it, Jerome. Good backstory to fill me in on what you've done. Question in regards to your construction company. You still have that business up and running?
I do. Yeah, I have guys out today right now. In fact, I was dealing with that just before we got started on this podcast.
So let me pick your brand of construction, right? So
Sure.
are you considered a paper contractor where you're subbing everything out, or do you have your own people on the crew that are actually working for you?
Both. So I'm a paper contractor on my homes. We do use our own crews for concrete work. So, but we have full crews. So we have a lot of government jobs that we do, a lot of high-end industrial concrete work for ADA stuff. And then we have residential clients as well. So we're pouring driveways, foundations, and patios, and so forth and so on.
So your niche, you're the absolute best when it comes down to the concrete. Anything that has to do with that, your crew does it. Everything else, you outsource.
We do. And we'll pick up a little bit of like the grade work. We own tractors and stuff like that. So we run a lot of our own tractors, do a lot of our own pad sites, drainage, hydrology stuff like that. But out everything else we do outsource. When we're building new construction, I'd consider myself more of a paper contractor because we're subbing out 95% of the entire build minus the concrete work. And actually, everything that we do out of state. So everything that we're doing in Arizona, everything that I'm doing in Washington State, everything that I'm doing in California, everything that I do beyond the state lines of New Mexico, I'm a paper contractor. And in fact, I'm hiring contractors now, and we're doing cost plus models. Pay out our contractors, so we're not even a paper contractor anymore. And a lot of those, we're the developer, and so we'll buy the land, I'll do the entitlements, and then we'll hire a general contractor to go in and facilitate the work.
Now, you said you're in multiple states. In those states, you do in single family tract homes, or are you combination with commercial properties, or like what are you doing in these other states for build outs?
So we have a lot going on. So yeah, we're doing single, not tract homes. We're redeveloping real estate in the Seattle market. We're in a small, dense area. So we're buying real estate that was built in the 70s, 80s. We're leveling it and we're doing dense development. We're building vertical. So we'll take one lot and turn it into four or six lots. And we go in and try to buy up an area. So we have 25 homes that we're doing in there. They're cottage style homes, what they call them. But they're essentially small, semi-custom homes that we're selling for $1 million up in the Seattle area, just a little over $1 million actually. And so we have 25 of those ones going up right now, and we don't have to short plat them. It's just a code that we found, a little niche in that area that we found we can go in by a single lot without shooting a short plat, which means subdivide the lots for those of you guys who are new in the real estate game. And we can go in without going through a 6 month process of short platting and redesigning the layout of the parcels. And we can build four to six homes 5 feet apart, and they're real dense. We go up two little two-story houses, 1,350 to 1,650 square feet. Those are a cool little business model, great little profitability. We make a few $100,000 per home, and a great little business model. Then down in Palm Springs, we're catering to the clean energy economy that's happening over there with the windmill and solar farms. And then it's a big cannabis marijuana growing area. So they're building in Palm Springs, they're building out subdivisions of warehouses that are growing marijuana. It's crazy. You go in over there and it's just, I had no idea.
You get a contact guy. You walk in over there, you're high right off the bat, right?
Yeah, bro, contact high. I mean, you just roll down your windows when you drive through these subdivisions and you just get fumigated with the smell. And it's unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it in my life. And so we have a few homes going up. We're testing the market over there. So when we test a market, we don't go in aggressively. We're doing three, and then I have lots for three more. So we're doing six. A lot of the money that we do, though, Billy, from those subdivisions, it's a great way to generate capital, right? And quick capital, because it doesn't take a lot of time to buy land and build houses, but we can generate a few million dollars. And then we deploy that into multifamily, multi-unit real estate. And the great thing, as you know, about multifamily real estate is you can deploy it tax deferred or tax free, depending on how you set your capital up and your accountant advises. But we're able to take that money and those profits and not pay any taxes on them in the immediate time frame and put our money to work for us in multi-unit real estate. And then we have cash flow, we have passive income. And so I'm buying some and we're building some of those apartments new. We're doing an affordable housing model. That affordable housing model, Billy, it's been awesome. I'll tell you, municipalities are loving it. I was on the phone with a municipality. I won't tell you guys the municipality yet because I got to get in there first. We're exercising. I was on the phone with one municipality yesterday, and we were getting a little resistance. And I started talking about this affordable housing model that I'm talking to you guys about. And all of a sudden, the tables turned 180 degrees. And I sat back and I go, well, look, what's your need for affordable housing in your area? You know, I mean, are you guys good on housing? I mean, affordable housing, not an issue. And then all of a sudden they started backpedaling. And it's what we're experiencing with a lot of municipalities nationwide. When we start talking about affordable housing and being and giving back by building these things, they're receptive. And so it's been a home run in that regards. And we haven't had a lot of friction. So we're excited about that.
Let me ask you this, because you just went over a lot. You gave a lot of really good information. I'm sure the listener is going to have a million questions. I have a million questions. So I want to back up to your Washington projects, because you're Washington, you're in Palm Springs, the last affordable housing piece. You didn't tell me the state, but I'm assuming it's in another state. So first of all, how are you, Jerome Maldonado, how are you sitting in where you're sitting in New Mexico and figuring out where to invest in these other states? Do you have people in the area that you're joint venturing with that are bringing you these deals, or what are you doing to actually go in and find, because this thing in Washington is a niche, right? I mean, you found out you don't have to subdivide and go through the variance process. You can level and build cluster homes. And that's like a tremendous value add play where you said you're making a couple $100,000 on each property pulling it out. How did you find out to do that in that particular area? What was that process like?
I didn't. So a little bit of everything you do is luck, but it's exercising your day-to-day contacts, right? So I've always given an example of the real estate game is like harvesting a garden. You got to plant seeds. I never really know. Like one market that I want to get into is the Dallas-Fort Worth market again. I was there. I left it. And I know it's a good market. I like that area. I lived in San Antonio. But like Kirtland just happened to be a gentleman who followed me on social media. I did know him through an investment group that we had done a business together in prior years. And like any good relationship, they're developed, right? It's not something like, hey, I meet you and we go out and we do a business venture together. This gentleman would send me information asking me questions about his single parcel developments that he was doing these $4 million, $3 million, $2 million homes on. And as the market started to shift before the pandemic, pre-pandemic, I got real curious. And I said, this guy's really, really building this stuff out. And just through my social presence, he reached out to me. We did know each other prior. And he started sending me a bunch of stuff, and he was nervous, but he was working for Microsoft full time and wasn't really, he was moonlighting and building. And so he was asking questions curiously about, you know, my opinion on stuff. And so he got my attention after about a year of this, sending me this information. And then I think the big question that he asked me was, do you really think the market's going to fall apart even in markets like Seattle? And this was pre-pandemic when the market was scaling aggressively. And we as investors were going in investing with caution, knowing what we went through in 2008. And so I landed up partnering with Ramez, and a good guy, you know, real simple guy. He's a Jordan, hard worker. And he's the one that actually knew the codes, and he didn't even know them because a lot of this was new. The municipality had just adapted these the June before we started this. We were one of the first contractors to go in and tackle this new code. It's still new, so there's very few people that are doing it. In fact, we're working through minor logistical items with the city. So there's a lot of redlining on plans and so forth that we have to go through. So there's some
hurdles,
painful hurdles that we have to go through together with the city. We're figuring them out, right? Our architect is. And I think it's what some people are afraid of. You know, they say, well, I'll do that when it's figured out, right? I'm more of, hey, once it's figured out, everybody's in there. And so I don't want to be that guy. I want to be the guy figuring it out. So a lot of business is having the foresight to see something. And then second, being able to take action on it methodically, right? It was something that we saw the need. We took action on it. And we were willing to go through the pains and hurdles to make it happen because we knew the profitability. And we're actually making a little bit more than a couple $100,000 on each home. We just have a great business model up there. Just work, just a little niche area.
Yeah. And so your role is oversight on construction because that's your background. And is it money as well? Or is it just the construction side? Tell me how that joint venture is looking.
A little bit of both. You know, I wear a lot of hats. So we're doing all the entitlements. Ramez just happens to be an exceptional partner in that regards. He's probably the best one that I have that most people don't know entitlements. When I say entitlements, I know people are going, what the hell is that? That's everything it takes to get to permits so that you can build. So the entitlements are dealing with the city, your planning and zoning, dealing with utilities, your water, your sewer, all of that stuff, dealing with the plat itself where you have a surveyor come in and plat your homes, and then your architect work and everything associated with it from civil engineering all the way down the line to where you can go into the city and say, okay, here's my finished plans, engineering, all my water, my curbs, my gutters, my grading, drainage, everything. Here it is. I need permits. And then you get your entitlements. Those are your entitlements. And Ramus happens to be pretty spectacular at that stuff. Although I was helping him yesterday on a multifamily deal that we're working on in the Northwest as well. And there's stuff on the commercial end that he's not familiar with yet, right? That I've been doing for years. So I bring to his attention. So together we were able to come in on my office and him. And yeah, we're able to leverage off each other. So the hat I wear is I help out with that stuff. He deals with a lot of it on site. And then I fly out, I look at the land, we underwrite it together. And it's good to have a partner like that. He's real analytical. I'm more of the assertive driver that drives things. And I'm the catalyst behind a lot of it. I'm the guy that every day is making the moves, putting in the phone calls. And I still do. I do a ton of phone calls, Billy. I talk to the engineers. I'm pressing people every single day. That's my job. I feel like that's my job. And I make these projects go. I'm the go guy. I'm the guy going, sending out the emails, the follow-ups, the phone calls, and just pressing things forward on projects. That's an important part of it. Big part of it.
It's probably one of the most important parts. And a lot of people in every business, they just fall short. They don't know how to follow up or follow through. And those are the two keys, not the only keys, but two keys to success in growing any type of business.
Absolutely, Bill. No, hands down. People don't realize, you know, that follow-up is huge as far as time and getting things going and the follow-through on it. Because people talk about it, and then I'll even have partners sometimes and talk about it, and I'll say, I'll think they're doing something. Two days later, I'll check and follow up. Where are we at? And, oh, I thought you were going to do it.
Yeah. Okay. You know. Yeah. So, tell me, when you're going through this, Jerome, how are you structuring the financing? Are you doing private money? Are you syndicating? Are you doing a combination of both? What does that look like?
We're doing a combination of all of it. So the subdivisions, I've self-funded my whole life. I'm a debt-free company. I fund a lot of the residential builds myself.
Congratulations, by the way. A lot of people can't say that.
Yeah, we started small, didn't acquire a lot of debt, wasn't out buying Lamborghinis and stuff like that. I have like milestone watches. We drive nice cars, but we've been humble. We stayed in the same house for 18 years, thank God. We were going to build a big giant house right before the recession. I'm glad that we didn't. So we've let things roll out slow. And I think part of that, Billy, was that I went through a lot in my 20s in business. So in spite of wanting to go buy fancy stuff, I was able to just stay clean and humble in regards to how we did stuff. And I created a modest lifestyle that I still live today. I feel like, you know, in so many ways. In fact, my wife tells me I need to do a little bit more for myself. But I think once you start having that driving direction, you just feel like your money is more well-placed in assets that grow. So I just kind of drive it in that direction. But yeah, it's been, I finance a lot of my stuff through institutional money. So in early years until 2016, Billy, I didn't use any private money at all. I didn't raise capital. I didn't syndicate. I would just take the capital I had. I would go to the bank. I'd put a project together. I get the plans, designs, and I'd go ask for a loan and just use institutional money. I was limited, though, to what I could do with my capital. Yep. And I don't care what anybody says. It doesn't matter how much you make. And we were making a lot of money, I felt. You're limited. You can't grow to a level that you want to. So in 2016, I made a little pivot and I thought to myself, look, I was 2016, I was in my young 40s. And I said, you know, it's time for me to make a hard run at this if I'm going to do this and retire and set myself up forever. And so I started looking and educating myself. And what I tell people is it doesn't happen overnight. So I started in 2016, looking into syndicating, trying to understand it, trying to raise capital. It wasn't somewhere I was just out frivolously just running after people's capital. It took me 2 years, Billy, of like hard research, really understanding, networking, trying to really figure out the syndication game. And in 2018, for the first time, I brought in capital and I was modest with it. I had like a $15 million project. I brought in like $1 million. It was a little tougher than I thought at first because people didn't know me. I was just starting to get my name out. First time in history, I created a social media platform. I was on Facebook in February of 2018 for the first time in my life. And I started doing social media stuff. And so I started pressing out my social presence back in 2018. And now we're starting to raise a little bit of capital. I'm still using a lot of my own capital because it makes things go quicker. I'm able to make a little more money and get institutional money. We have a 104 unit redevelopment project I'm doing in Phoenix right now. I bought an old office building with a buddy of mine, Kyle Mitchell. And we're taking that and we're converting it into 104 units of a one bedroom multifamily apartment complex. And so we raised about $1 million, 1.3, and the project's going to be valued at about $17 million when it's all said and done. And we're just getting ready to break ground here in the next 30 days.
So you married, congratulations on that deal, by the way. So you married the syndication of a little over $1 million, and then you went out, you got bank financing for the rest?
Correct. What people don't realize is when you go in, your project's worth something once you get your entitlements and your plans. Yep. And that's what people don't realize.
Your value goes up substantially when that happens.
Oh, yeah. I don't need $17 million to build this project out, right? So that's the value of it. That's what we're comping it out at based on current comps in that area, right? So I'm valuing that property at $17 million based on what other projects are selling for conservatively right now. And so I'll go in and let's say it costs me $10 million to build out the whole project. I can go and tie up the land, get all the entitlements, raise $1 million, maybe put in $1 million of my own money into the project. And for a couple million dollars, I can get the rest financed at 3% interest rate or better. And I have very little out of pocket. Money's cheap right now. And so I won't raise any more capital than I absolutely need to, Billy, because I can just get cheap money from the banks.
So that $1 million that you just syndicated, just give the listeners an understanding of how you put that together. Is there a pref? Or is it straight equity? What does that look like?
So this one we did straight. This one we did just debt on, and we just gave them straight debt. We gave them four options on this. They could come in for where they got paid monthly on a smaller amount for like $50,000. Give them 10%. Or if people came in over $100,000 and they were willing to get paid out at the end of the project, then we give them 14% on debt. It was a little hard to raise, Billy, I'll tell you. Raising on debt, you really have to have a solid project and a good reputation.
Yeah.
People want a little bit of equity. And so anytime you do an equity raise where you give people a small percentage of equity based on what they're putting into the project, people tend to like that a little bit more. It secures their money a little bit stronger. When you're raising debt, you got to have a reputation. You got to have a good reputation and you got to have a track record. People got to trust you. They got to like you and trust you in order to raise straight debt on real estate projects, especially when raising debt and you're not securing it with the asset. So they're really believing in you. So
unsecured debt is a very tough way to go.
Yeah, it is.
To the end investors for sure.
Yeah. Toughest $1 million I had to raise. And it wasn't that hard, but still, I mean, I don't like begging for money at all. I don't like asking for it. I feel like I'm beyond it. I feel like, God, if people want to come in and work with me, great. I love to have them. Can definitely utilize their capital and grow, but I'm just at a place in my life where if I got to beg for money, I'm not going to do it. You know,
so are you strategically set up right now? Because I looked at your Facebook and your Instagram, like you're on Twitter, you're really out there with the presence. Are you specifically and strategically going out and consistently educating people to raise money from them or not really? You're just like when you have a need, you just go to your circle and try to raise it. What does that look like?
Yeah, I'm not going to like investors meetups and that stuff. I probably should be in a day, you know, you got so much time allocated and, with the pandemic, I never really got that outreach. It was something that we were going to do last year in 2020, start making a stronger outreach to going to investors meetups, which I encourage people to do. It's one of the things that's been advantageous for Kyle Mitchell, who's one of my business partners. He came in out of the golf industry, didn't have a ton of syndicating experience, didn't have any syndicating or apartment experience. He learned it. And he was able to raise capital, not from a social media presence. I mean, he has a very small social media presence, but he was very active in the community that he was investing in. He made it a point to go to investors meetups, meet people, and network with other people, going to events. People were syndicating, and there was other apartment guys out there. And so he was very successful that way. I just go out and I just hit my social presence. When I do it, we have a good email list. And because I'm partnered with good people like Ty Lopez, we own a lot of real estate together. I just partner him with him only on real estate transactions. We're doing some stuff down in Puerto Rico together, some big giant builds. And then we own some industrial warehouses together. And through my social presence with Ty Lopez, I've been helpful. But it's that outreach of networking that really has made it the raising of capital possible for us.
I love it, man. It seems like your success, not where you're at, but broadened across America, is predominantly because you have really good partners in the areas you're investing in. Yeah,
for sure.
They can make you or break you. Good partners are bad partners, man. If you have a solid individual with you that's adding value, you know, you guys can go to the moon together. But if you have somebody who's just not able to put it together, it can be a disaster.
No, it can. And that's, Billy, hands down. I tried partnerships in the early 90s when I got in. I promised myself I would never do it. I remember my mom going to a trade show with me. Not with me, but she showed up to support me at a trade show I was doing back in like 1998. And I kept partnering with people. And I think my parents aren't entrepreneurs. They're not business people. But
right. My
mom's she's a little spitfire for sure. And I remember she just came. She was, why do you keep partnering with these people? She's giving them money. She goes, you're afraid you can't do it by yourself or what? And I was like, she told me straight out like that in front of
them.
And I think she's, much as we hate to give our parents credit for some of the stuff, there's truth behind a lot of what parents see. And as being a parent, I see it, right? You know your kids. And so I think she saw that I had a little bit of a weakness in the 90s where she felt like I felt like I needed somebody. And I did. I felt like I needed somebody. But I was getting taken for a lot of profits. And so at that point in time, I said, you know, she's right. I can do this on my own. And that's when I went 100% independent. And I didn't do partners until 2018. Ever. I didn't know no partners. In 2016, when I started doing this little change, I said, look, if I'm going to grow and I'm not going to kill myself and have a heart attack doing this because it's a lot of work doing it on your own, I need to find good people. And so my outreach was to do that, to partner with people. I knew exactly what I wanted to do and what I needed to do in order to make this work. I didn't want to have an infrastructure of staff to do it with because I know how it is like running staff. I've had hundreds of employees. And I knew that I didn't want to go there again. I didn't want to have the payroll and the stress of an infrastructure that I've had in the past of managing hundreds of employees. And so I thought, let me partner with good people. Let me give away some of the profits. And I bet you I can do more with it like this. And so I have. And my outreach now isn't like partners. We're not trying to pay a mortgage anymore, right? Like when I was in my 20s, I was trying to get my life together. I was partnering with people that were in the same situation I was in. And so we were all just trying to make a living. So in those circumstances, it's hard sometimes to have a partner. When you get to a place in your life where it's not really about the money to pay a mortgage and put food on the table, but more so you're building a lifestyle, you're building a real business, or you're doing it because you it's more of behind the challenge to see if you can, and you're building generational wealth, it becomes a little bit different. And so there's less greed on the table. People are not in survival mode. And if you get with good people that you know for a couple of years and you know what their motives are, their ethics are, then you can drive it, right? And so my business partners are that. They're people that are not trying to pay a mortgage. They're people, they love the game and they want to build this game. And so they, yes, at the end of the day, we all want to make money, but we're able to do it in an ethical fashion. So I feel like I have some really good partners. Each of them have, we all have our flaws, including myself. I don't think anybody's perfect. So you got to overlook some of the flaws that your partners don't have. You pick up the pieces, and hopefully together you have qualities that you guys can leverage off each other. And that's the goal.
Yeah, it sounds like also a lot of these partners, you've been friends of them or have known them for quite some time before you guys decided to do some sort of a joint venture. Is that accurate?
A couple of years. They're not people that go back like to my childhood. They're people like Ty and I. We met in 2016, 2017. And really doing stuff for them out of the goodness of my heart. And I had a motive, you know, I was doing it because I wasn't asking for anything, but I was doing it on behalf of them and the team in lieu of working with them, right? And so I created partnerships by giving a little more of me without asking for anything. And when you do that, it's surprising how things kind of flourish together, right?
Yeah, I don't want to gloss over that. That's a huge statement that a lot of young entrepreneurs and even seasoned entrepreneurs just don't get. They're always looking what's in it for them. And you really need to just give without asking for anything in return. And so, I mean, if people aren't watching, that are watching this, they don't know who Ty Lopez is. The guy has a tremendous presence on the internet. You went out and you just, I guess, gave him an offering. I guess he was looking for help in something. And you just offered your services, something like that?
Yep. Yeah, it was. They didn't really have the real estate stuff down. They were trying to put an investment group together for their e-commerce brands. And so Alex, Dr. Alex Meir, Ty's number one first business partner in all the big brands, he would come to me. Ty always had a celebrity status. So when I was around Ty, it was real tough because of the amount of people that were always around us. But I was always invited back for like investors dinners. And I was at the very first one where there was just four people. And it was just more for, hey, Jerome, you know, we don't really know real estate. You want to come and take a look at, I love your opinion on the real estate take of what we're doing. They were looking at these little mobile home parks. And I was sitting back and I was underwriting and I was like, good God, you know, and they would ask me what I thought and I give them my honest opinion. And it was some that were just not there, you know, when I went in early years and they respectfully listened to me. And then they would ask me, you know, how I would position stuff. And I would tell them, and I was very honest. And I'd fly back out on my expense to go and listen to more of their investors, you know, more of their investors dinners and more of their investment offerings in early offering years. And I was just there. I was present and I was around. I tried to be around everything I could possibly be around. And I tried to give back as much as I could. And I feel like I'm an integral piece of the infrastructure that was originally created through retail e-commerce ventures, Schweizer Alexander, and some of the early companies, right? So that's how I did it, is I didn't ask for anything. I made my own plane flight to pay for my own hotel rooms, and I was just a part of it. And now I have ownership in almost everything. And that one little sector, that's like one little piece of my life. Yep. And I got that times 10 in other sectors.
It's amazing, dude. Congratulations, bro. Congratulations. Thanks, bro. Yeah, you're a very calm, soft-spoken individual, but I think you're a freaking animal. Like, you make it happen, brother. You definitely make it happen. So listen, you have an event that you're going to be hosting along with Ty and a bunch of other people. Tell the audience about the event. When is it? What is it about?
We do it every year. It's Real Estate Domination. We're in Las Vegas, Nevada this year. We were supposed to do it in Las Vegas last year, but we landed up doing it virtually from Chicago. Last year, we had over 4,000 people opt into it last year. Always had about 400 people live streaming it at any given time when we ran it. In Real Estate Domination, this is the third year. It's our third annual, and it's a great event because it's a non-sales event. You're not going to get pitched on stuff. It's a full value event. And so one thing that you'll know if you know me, if you've attended it, if anybody that has attended it, I don't bring in polished speakers, you know, with the exception of my partner, Ty Lopez, and a couple other people that have experience on stage. Almost, I'd say 80% of the panel doesn't have like on stage presence. These are just badasses that actually work in the industry. They're not like polished speakers. These are real doers, right? Like, these are people that I know from the industry. And I say, hey, I know what you're doing. Come and speak at my event and teach people what we're doing. And so I have real estate pros coming in. A couple of my business partners, like I was talking about, Kyle Mitchell and Raymond Dabbs, they'll be talking there. And I got some really hard hitters. You know, I got Todd Ault coming in. He's a billion, just hit billionaire status this year. I've been able to watch and I've known Todd for several years. So I've been able to see him as he take his company public. I saw him on the New York Stock Exchange. And when they did their release and offering, and his stock went over $4 billion. And now he's a billionaire status this year. So Todd will be there. He'll be part of our inner circle. So there's just going to be some really cool badasses there. Ty and I are going to share with you guys some of the big luxury flips that we're doing in Puerto Rico that we're building out, and some of the flips that we're doing, the industrial warehouse space, and how we're positioning e-commerce with real estate. We'll kind of share with you some insight on that business model. We're going to talk about how we're buying land and building houses, how we're deploying that capital into multi-unit real estate, passive income, tax deferred or tax free. We're going to teach you guys some cool little tax strategies. So it's going to be a great event. I'm excited for it. It's going to be November 5th, 6th, and 7th at the MGM. I'll give the and get these folks, they can get them registered, you know.
Yeah. I could put it in the show notes for sure. I could have my assistant put that in there and push it out, give them the links and everything else. And it sounds like it's going to be a killer event, bro.
Yeah, it is. We get good props every year. They're small, intimate events. You know, we're expecting about 300 people live. It's not going to be a huge event. Probably have about that equal amount of people streaming it live. So we'll probably have about 600 people watching at any point in time. It's growing. We went from 100 people 3 years ago and nobody streaming.
Progress of life.
We were having 400 people streaming online and 4,000 people opting in. I think we had a total of 1,500 people circulate through the entire event as it went on. And so I think we're going to have something similar to that this year, but we're doing it live. And so anytime you can do things live and network, ladies and gentlemen, you guys hear this story, we're talking about this stuff. This is where the networking begins, the events with badasses, good people in doing things that you want to be doing. That's where you meet them. That's where you start forming these relationships. And that's where people miss the boat. They don't realize that that small investment into themselves to be there to network is key. That's where you meet the good people.
Yeah. Networking events, masterminds, like if you're not doing it, you have to do it. You're going to get to where you want to go like 10 times faster with a group than if you try to do this shit by yourself, because who the hell wants to figure it out?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Right. Listen, if people want to get in touch with you, Jerome, what's your handles online, offline? How do they reach you?
Real easy. I'm everywhere. Just go to Jerome Maldonado. You got my name here on the under my face. And you guys go to any social media platform from LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, you know, our YouTube channel. On Instagram, it's Jerome Maldonado and the number one. Or our ULR is JeromeMaldonado.com. And so real easy to find. And you guys Google me. You guys DM me. I'll answer back. You guys have questions. You know, my team's real good about getting with me, especially on questions they can't answer. And we're here for you. We're making big moves. And we love a good outreach from good people that are doing good things or at least trying to do good things. And so real easy to find.
You're doing some amazing shit, brother. I appreciate it. I don't know how we hooked up, but it was great having you on as a guest, dude. I want to get to stay to know you because you're somebody that's definitely going places. Appreciate you taking time.
I appreciate you, bro. I got to get you on stage, man. I see that you're doing stuff on stage and killing it too. So I got to get you on stage, my friend.
For sure, brother. For sure. Thanks again for coming on, bro.
Yes, thank you for having me, Billy. Really appreciate you.
Take care.